That's the end of the first half. As the teams head to the locker room, the Spartans lead the Bulldogs by a score.
You guys stink.
Jeez, Coach, we're only down a couple of points.
No, I mean you guys really smell. You need to hit the showers. And here, I got every one of you new bars of soap from the Sterling Soap Company. Each bar is artisan crafted using natural ingredients and essential oils. They also have shave soaps, colognes, beard balm, and a whole lot more. Now get in there.
But Coach, we have another half to play.
I don't care. I can't stand to be around you.
A few minutes later.
All right, bring it in tight. You guys are still playing terrible, but you're smelling great out there. Now listen, you're going to need to stock up for the rest of the season. We got a lot of tough games left. So go to sterlingsoap.com after the game. That's S-T-I-R-L-I-N-G soap.com. You got that?
Yes, Coach.
Great. sterlingsoap.com on three. One, two, three.
sterlingsoap.com.
We know the sport of football is growing here in America as more and more people are starting to enjoy it, but it's growing around the world as well, and even in some spots you might not know of. We have a guest today that's calling from the Baltic region to tell us all about football in their area, and he's up in just a moment to tell us all about it.
This is the Pigskin Daily History Dispatch, a podcast that covers the anniversaries of American football events throughout history. Your host, Darren Hayes, is podcasting from America's North Shore to bring you the memories of the gridiron, one day at a time.
Hello, my football friends. This is Darren Hayes of PigskinDispatch.com. Welcome once again to the Pigpen, your portal to positive football history. And before we get going with today's episode, make sure you hit that like and subscribe button on your YouTube channel. Also, join us at PigskinDispatch.com and hit the subscribe button there so you know when all of the latest articles are out on there. And don't forget our podcast, too. And today, our episode is coming from around the world, in the Baltic Sea region, I believe in Estonia. And our guest is James Baxenfield. James, welcome to the Pigpen.
Thank you very much for having me. Pleasure to be here.
Yeah, this is a pretty cool thing. I saw you had some correspondence with Arnie Chapman of the Sports History Network, and you're going to be thinking about starting a podcast on football in the Baltic, and maybe you could tell us a little bit about that project and where your plans are going with that.
Oh, absolutely. Yes, the podcast is starting. It'll be it'll be launching on the 1st of December. And the first episodes are already recorded. It'll be a monthly podcast looking into different aspects of the history of American football in the Baltic region and among the Baltic nations, including the diasporas.
Wow. Okay. That is really cool. Now, you have to excuse me, and I'm probably speaking for everybody that's listening here in the States, American football played in the Baltic region. And correct me if I'm wrong, Estonia, where you're at, that is a former USSR province or republic, part of the USSR at one time. We don't really think of American football being played, in that part of the world. So why don't you tell us a little bit about, how people feel about American football there?
So, yes, football came here in at the end of the Soviet Union. 1989 actually was the first games that were played here in Tallinn in Estonia. And since then, it's been a small sport. It really started to develop in the mid-90s in Estonia. And then in the early 2000s, and particularly in the 2010s, it really took off at the local amateur level. It's still very much a niche sport in many respects, but growing constantly.
Oh, okay. So the late 80s, it's under Soviet control. Now, how did things like players get equipment? Were they fully equipped like we know a modern football player now, or were they playing more of like a tag or flag football?
Most of it began with various forms of tag football. And you see a familiar pattern that there's a pattern that you see in other parts of Europe or other places around the world where the game starts to develop, where quite often you have players using hockey gear or adapted helmets from different sports, this sort of thing. It took a while for the teams to become fully equipped, but there's quite a few of them in the region now.
Well, that's really quite interesting, because if people that listen to this show, we know we have experts coming on talking about American football history, here in the States, and how guys just grabbed whatever they could. You know, they'd grabbed, you know, baseball equipment. They'd play, you know, grab their, you know, old sweaters, anything they could, you know, farm equipment or farm garments that they would wear just to protect them as they're doing some heavy labor's things, work. You know, that's what they're wearing on the football field. And it sounds much the same here in, you know, the 20th century and 21st century, happening in your part of the world, where people are grabbing their hockey gear and you know, shoulder pads and stuff from other sports. That's pretty cool. That's very interesting.
It is, yes. It seems to be a familiar pattern in pretty much everywhere the game takes hold.
Yeah, and it's also, you know, very likened to where, because I know myself, you know, being exposed to the sport from birth, basically, living in Western Pennsylvania, you know, I can remember on the playgrounds, even in first grade and in, you know, early elementary school, we would be on the playgrounds playing tag football and flag football and sometimes tackle football and having our teachers yell at us for taking each other ground and getting the bruised elbows and skinned knees and everything. But you know, it sounds very much like the development of folks there in your part of the world that are getting accustomed to the game of American football.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. So, is there like some organized leagues play there in local teams, or how is this set up? The most popular level of football in Estonia?
Okay, absolutely. Yes, there are certainly teams. They're mostly located in the larger cities. And actually, currently at the moment, the largest competition that involves all three of the Baltic states, the Baltic League, is currently coming to the end of its regular season, going into the final quite soon, actually.
Oh, okay. So it's right on a parallel season with almost like the Canadian football as they're getting ready for their Grey Cup. You folks are getting ready for your championship series. So what do they call the championship game or the championship series over there?
So it's the Baltic League, and they're competing for the Baltic League Cup.
Okay. All right. Well, that's a very appropriate name. You don't have to reach too far for that to recognize what's going on. That's really cool. So who are the big favorite teams this year? Who's in competition this year?
I'll give you a quick rundown of the teams that we have in there currently.
Yeah, certainly.
So from Estonia, we have the Tartu Titans. From Latvia, the Riga Bears. And Lithuania has the most teams currently represented. We have the Vilnius Iron Wolves, the Kaunas Jukes, and the Klaipėda Kurionians. Kurionians is the name of a tribe that lived in the region during the medieval period, associated with piracy and various other things in the coastal area.
Well, so sort of like our
And
Buccaneers here in the NFL. They have,
indeed,
yeah.
that's a good comparison, yeah.
Yeah. I like
And
the name Iron Wolves too, the one you mentioned. That sounds kind of a fearsome name. I don't know if I'd want to mess with the Iron Wolf.
it is a good name. It comes from a legend about the founding of the Vilnius, the ancient capital and the current capital of Lithuania. Actually, the way that teams are named is the way that the teams are named, particularly in Lithuania, they very much draw from local history. So the founding of the city of Vilnius, the Jukes is the name of the title of the rulers of the Grand Duchy of Lithuania, and the Curonians, as I mentioned a moment ago. But then at the other end of the scale, in Estonia, you actually have teams that appear from time to time where they have Estonian language names, which kind of bucks the trend that we normally see of American football teams adopting English language names.
Yeah, you got to have some local flavor in it too. You know, it's not just our game here in America. If you're playing it there, that's your game too. And you know, bring your own local culture names to it. That's kind of interesting. You know, do the teams have like team logos and everything too to go with the names?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Everything that you would associate with an American football team is all there. There's sometimes cheerleaders, sometimes bands get involved. They have live coverage which is increasing quite a lot now. You can watch the games on YouTube.
Really? Okay.
So yeah, there's really two aspects to the podcast. One is a personal aspect that I want to improve communicating research outside of academia, and this felt like a really good topic to approach, something that I'm very passionate about. Okay, and the second aim of the podcast is to try to help gain a little bit of visibility for the sport in this part of the world. And I say help specifically because the teams themselves and other people involved with the game are really doing a fantastic job in that area themselves. Particularly over the last 12 months, their social media presence is increasing constantly. There's coverage of the games. You can watch them live on YouTube and then later on afterwards.
Yeah,
Yep.
very, very cool. So, with the games being on YouTube and are people attending games? Are you having like some local crowds that are coming in and watching the games and starting to support and understand the game?
Yes, absolutely. There are, of course, people are attending the games live. It's not, sometimes crowds can be quite large, sometimes smaller. But as I say, it's still very much a developing sport. The largest crowds that were ever seen here were actually back in 1989, when two Finnish teams came over and played in Tallinn. Approximately 7,300 people attended that game. It's still the record for the region. And shortly afterwards, a group of Americans from Oklahoma, the Oklahoma Stampede, came over to the Soviet Union to play three exhibition games, one in Moscow, one in Tallinn, and one in Leningrad, present-day St. Petersburg. And I believe it was around 3,000 or just a little bit over 3,000 people who attended that game. Those are still the records by far. I don't have the specific numbers for how many people attend the games.
Hey, that's all right. Those are some we have college games that don't get that many people in it sometimes. So, don't feel bad about that. That's nothing to be ashamed of. We have a 150-year head start on the game here to people understanding. Now, you think about it. I officiated football for 27 years at the high school level here, and football is by far the most complicated sport. The rules are the most complicated, probably of any sport around that I'm aware of. The strategies involved are, from a man-on-man strategy all the way up to team strategy, or just, it's just mind-blowing how many different directions that coaches and players can take the strategies. Winning your personal one-on-one assignments to your overall team assignments to get victory, and it's. Where the game of what we call here in the States, soccer and rugby are complicated games themselves. They're much simpler in rules and objective than the game of football. So it's hard to educate a culture to the complications of football, but it's amazing how it's growing around the world, and in your area to do that. We see the National Football League is starting to play games. We just had one recently in Germany. They've been in Ireland. My team, the Pittsburgh Steelers, played in Ireland about a month ago. They're in all over Europe. There's NFL Europe for a while. Do you ever foresee possibly a National Football League game being played in your area?
That would be fantastic, and I would love to see that. I think it would be some way down the road before anything like that could happen. And in terms of the rules, in terms of the rules that you just mentioned, it's really not unusual for the as they're setting up for the game in the broadcast for the commentators to be explaining the rules still at this point to help people understand some aspects of what's going on.
Well, you I'm sure you probably watch some American football there when National Football League. There's sometimes the commentators have to explain to the American audience the rules because rules are changing. Like such as the dynamic kickoff is the last couple of years in the National Football League is really kind of foreign to us, and it's really catching on. I kind of enjoy it, but yeah, sometimes you have to have the rules explained to you here too. So it's good to
This
have
is
those
true.
coaches and commentators that are experts.
No, absolutely. Yeah. I should really explain that sometimes the rules that are being explained are adaptations to the game, because quite often the games take place in on local fields or local pitches, and for example, particularly the rules for kicking are quite often adapted. Just simply, if it's in a residential area, it's not exactly safe to be kicking them off into traffic. With the Baltic League that's happening at the moment, for example, there's agreed upon starts at the 20-yard line and theoretical punts starting from the 30.
Yeah, that we do that quite a bit. And as people are trying to learn the game here, younger children are learning, maybe elementary school level. They're often doing that because a lot of the craziest things that can happen and the weirdest rules are during the kicking game. So if you can control those kicking games to say, okay, we're starting a new series for the offense here without having the kicking game or the punting game, that's probably a smart thing to just learn the fundamentals of scrimmage play, and the kicking stuff will come later because that's the most complicated part and area, quite frankly, where a lot of people can get hurt because there's a lot of activity going on, and it's sometimes kind of nefarious the way things go on a kicking game.
This is true. There is a kicking game here. It's just not currently being played in the Baltic League. It really depends on who's playing, where they're playing, and who they have on the time. It's still quite. It's still not uncommon to see players playing from one team playing for a different team, to help make up the numbers from time to time.
All right. So, with the sport growing there, do you often, I know sometimes one of the signs that the culture starting to accept it is maybe you're driving, down the street and you see some kids playing ball in a local open area, sandlots we call them here. And have you ever like starting to witness that of younger crowds, playing American football, or is it not to that point yet that you've noticed?
I've certainly seen people. I've certainly seen people playing recreational games here and there, mostly throwing the ball. But flag football, aside from the tackle game, is starting to develop quite quickly here as well. There's, I believe, two teams within the last year or so have been established here in Tallinn, the Tallinn Bay Bowlers and the Haapsalu Hyenas. Yep. And additionally, we also have the first women's flag football team here in Tallinn, the Tallinn Diamonds.
All right. Well, that's definitely a great way to start it out here. I know the National Football League is starting to promote that for young ladies to play flag football at the high school level and below here as well, just trying to encompass everybody. They're quite a powerful machine, billions of dollars going into there. So they're trying to develop their game, not only across the world, but also, here at home to some folks. The female gender has not always been exposed to football the way that it has been to the male population, but it's really growing, and there's more and more ladies starting to enjoy the game. Matter of fact, my wife and my 21-year-old daughter, my youngest, we bought season tickets to go see the Pittsburgh Panthers, the college team, and actually, we're going to see them play Notre Dame this weekend, which is my favorite team. So it'd be kind of enjoyable to go to a sold-out crowd. We'll probably have 65,000 people in Pittsburgh to watch that game. So that'll be a lot of fun. But the women are starting to love football.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think flag football in general for everybody across the board is a great way into the sport. It removes a lot of barriers that can exist to playing tackle football, whether it's to do with the equipment or the availability of pitches.
And you don't get smashed to the ground as much either, don't you? It's still contact sport, but not as painful.
This is true. This is true. I
There's a
never
little
played
bit of the
football.
violence.
Yeah, I never played football myself, but I used to play rugby.
Oh
I'm
yeah,
probably a
well.
little bit too old. I'm probably a little bit too old now to play tackle, but I haven't completely ruled out trying to form a small flag team, even if just to give a few of the teams, because I'm often moving around the Baltic states quite a lot for my research, just to give them somebody to play against, just to I don't know, practice.
Right. Yeah. Hey, you got to start somewhere, right? Very cool. Okay, so I guess do the Super Bowl here is probably the biggest television show, has the highest ratings every single year in American culture. I know people around the world are watching it. They'll often flash to military bases or where people are watching it. But is the Super Bowl something that's watched live in your neck of the woods?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I watched every year myself, and there are watch parties springing up all the time in different places. Quite often, the bar will have a watch party.
So what's the time difference there? So if the Super Bowl roughly starts here about 6:30 p.m. On Super Bowl Sunday, on Eastern time zone, what time is it there in Estonia when the Super Bowl is kicking off?
Well, it depends on the location, of course, but roughly a 6 to 8 hour time difference, also depending on the time of the year.
So like almost 2 a.m. in the morning, your local
Pretty much.
time. You're getting up, people are getting up to, or staying up to watch the biggest game in America, American football. So, wow, that's amazing. That's some dedication. And folks, just to be totally honest with you, we started this interview here with James at 7:30 p.m. Eastern time. So he's being a real trooper here, being up like 3:30 in the morning over there. So we really appreciate you being able to take one for the team here and help us out in educating us here on Baltic football.
Oh, thank you. It's really a pleasure.
Yeah, so James, why don't you give us one more time before you go, what the title of your podcast is, and when and where people can find you.
Okay, certainly. So the podcast is called Gridiron Baltic. It looks at the history of American football in Estonia, Latvia, and Lithuania, also among the diasporas. There's quite a large history that stretches back to the beginning of American football because of immigration to the United States for various reasons. Particularly amongst Lithuanians, you find them quite often in college rosters from the late 19th century onwards. And also, a lot of local players emerged shortly after the First World War. Actually, I believe you'll be joining me on Gridiron Baltic before too long to talk about one of those specific players that you've written about in the book of yours recently.
I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, me too, very much. So yeah, and it's affiliated with the Sports History Network, and the episodes will be going out on the first of each month, beginning in December. We'll start with two episodes, which is about the Estonian Bowl, which took place in 1989. It's when two Finnish teams came over to Tallinn and played the first game in not only in Estonia but also in the Soviet Union.
Wow, that is still amazing. That blows me away, and I can't wait to hear that episode. It's going to be here actually. The 1st of December is my birthday, so I'll get to listen to it on my birthday. It'll be part of my birthday gift here to listen to that. I can't wait to hear that. And welcome to the history of football and podcasting, and welcome to the Sports History Network. We can't wait to see you. Folks, if you're driving or don't have a pen to jot it down, we'll put it in the show notes of both the YouTube channel and the podcast show notes. Also, we'll have a post on pigskindispatch.com where you'll be able to find James and his great Gridiron Baltic podcast that's going to be coming up here in just a few weeks. So, James, really appreciate you coming on and staying up and helping us out to learn a little bit about football in your region and supporting the football history. So, thank you.
Thank you very much.
That's all the football history we have today, folks. Join us back tomorrow for more of your football history. We invite you to check out our website, pigskindispatch.com, not only to see the daily football history, but to experience positive football with our many articles on the good people of the game, as well as our own football comic strip, Cleat Marks Comics. Pigskindispatch.com is also on social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and don't forget the Pigskin Dispatch YouTube channel to get all of your positive football news and history. Special thanks to the talents of Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff, for letting us use their music during our podcast.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
Sports History Network, where legends live on and the past plays loud. Welcome to the place where history's proud, from gridiron glory to the hardwood stars, from the racetrack heat to Olympic bars. It's the voices, the stories, the moments you miss, told by fans and pros who live for this. Hook and Famic, the Sports History Network, where the past comes alive, podcasts and blogs that keep the flame high, from Babe to Brady, Alley to the Dome. If it's history and sports, then this is the home. SportsHistoryNetwork.com, the headquarters of sports yesteryear.